Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon, everybody. Hope you're doing well in these crazy times. And let me start by talking about 2020. It was a very challenging year for Somero. It started out very nicely. Very strong construction demand. Customers were very, very positive about the outlook for the year. And then when March came around, the pandemic struck and the lockdown started, and nobody was quite sure what to expect at that point in time. My first concern was to get all of our employees safe, get everybody working from home that wasn't assembling equipment in the factory. I get the factory set up with social distancing, masks, temperature checks. We were very fortunate at that point in time that in most parts of the country and in many other countries around the world, construction was deemed essential. So that meant that our customers could keep working. It was a much different pace. It was much slower. Some jobs did not start up. Some customers chose not to have their employees work. So it provided a base for us in terms of we relatively knew the amount of business we'd have. But we still went ahead and furloughed over 20% of our employees. We did not take any government funding whatsoever. All the expenses were funded internally. And the second quarter was a very slow quarter. But as we started to get into the third quarter, business picked up. The fourth quarter was very, very strong. And we ended the year in excellent shape, strongly driven by the United States. And there's a couple of things that happened in the whole process of the year. Our flexible cost structure allowed us to end up with very good margins, excellent cash flow, and we had very, very strong new product development revenue. John and Enzo will talk to you about it and give you the details. And it was very encouraging. And therefore, we're putting additional investment in new product development for this year. We have a number of good projects in the pipeline. And last year, we introduced three new products. We're very excited about this year. Last year ended strong, and it's continued right into this year. So with that, I'll turn it over to John, and he'll give you some of the details.
Thank you, Jack. So picking up with regard to the financial highlights for the year, as Jack mentioned, we had a very strong bounce back in trading in the second half. Sales reached just a tad over $53 million for the second half of the year, which represents a record level of sales in a six-month period for the company. And that improved trading volume translated really well into profits. As Jack mentioned, we were able to leverage the company's flexible cost structure to closely align costs with activity levels throughout the year. And that includes a pretty rapid ramping back up in the second half to meet the accelerated demand. Result was a very stable margin for the year, EBITDA margin of 29% compared to 32% in the prior year in 2019, and very strong operating cash flows, which were up over 60% to over $30 million for the year. So very strong cash flow performance, which enabled significant dividend payments in 2020, led to an historically strong year-end cash position of over $35 million, allows for a substantial supplemental dividend to be paid in April of 2021, as well as board approval to complete a $1 million share repurchase to manage ongoing dilution from equity award programs. And that program we expect will be completed in 2021 as well. And all of those Enzo will speak to in more detail in a few minutes. So jumping over to slide 4 regarding sales by territory, it really does start with North America, which led the way in the second half. Sales in North America improved 12% compared to the second half of 2019, which was a very strong period as well, to end the year at over $70 million in sales in North America, which is 8% growth year over year. We're really pleased with the overall performance and the take rates across the product portfolio. And clearly, as restrictions lessened and projects fully resumed, the activity began to pick up in the US. We're also really encouraged by, in particular, the performance of the boom screed category in North America, which showed notable improvement in the second half, right on screed category as well, and also really good interest in new products that we brought to market this year. In Europe, sales in the second half improved modestly compared to the first, but declined on a year-over-year basis, as clearly the European market was more impacted by stricter COVID-19 restrictions than what we experienced here in the US. But on a positive note, our European customers continue to report solid project workloads in front of them. We see good opportunity in 2021 from new products, and we're very pleased with the broad-based contribution from the different countries across Europe in 2020, which we believe points to broad-based opportunity for us going forward. We did sell to 13 countries in Europe in 2020. In China, the revenue declined on a full-year basis about 30%, even though we did see some modest improvement in the second half compared to first. And that performance was really driven by three factors. First, the ongoing trade tensions between the U.S. and China have slowed. The result of that has been a slowed pace of investment in projects by multinational companies in China. So there's fewer development projects in China from Western companies. And that those types of projects have traditionally been a key part of our market opportunity because they're generally quality-oriented type of projects. The second factor, obviously, COVID-19 had an impact, a broad impact throughout the year. I mean, China was no different. And then the third factor, which is really the most important one, is there continues to be a very slow pace in growth and demand for quality flat level floors from domestic building owners and end users. And that remains the ultimate obstacle for us to breakthrough performance in the market in China. And given the current market conditions and landscape, we're very closely monitoring and evaluating our China strategy and plan to update the market in due course with any changes to that approach. So lastly, with regard to the Middle East, Latin America, and rest of world regions, they all followed a very similar pattern in terms of second half improvement compared to first half, but falling short on a full year basis. Each of these territories was impacted negatively by COVID. In many cases, the lockdown restrictions were far more intense than what we saw here in the US. A couple of markets to call out in particular, India. Sales in 2020 in India were 1.2 million compared to 1.4 million in 2019. That's relatively good performance considering the severity of the lockdown restrictions we experienced in India. We continue to see really good opportunity long-term in India as that market continues to develop. And then secondly, Australia, which is also included in the rest of the world region, our sales in 2020 were 1.1 million compared to 3.6 million in 2019. The performance there was impacted clearly by COVID restrictions, which were the most restrictive we saw anywhere in the world. But we did make the decision in the fourth quarter of the year to add direct selling and support resources to sell to and support customers in Australia and New Zealand in place of a longstanding dealer relationship, which we believe gives us an opportunity to further penetrate those two markets with new products that we're bringing to market. So we see good opportunity from that market on a go-forward basis. So on slide five, sales by product, just touching on a few points here. As I mentioned, we were very pleased with the broad-based improvement, which shows strength in the market. There's a lot of different projects out there. But in particular, we were very pleased with the performance of boom screeds in the second half. That was the category that improved the most compared to the first half of the year. Sales grew roughly $8.5 million in second half versus first. And that really came as a number of large projects commenced. Clearly, there's growing demand for warehousing in the U.S. to keep pace with the shift towards e-commerce. And that's something that we see as a long-term growth driver for the business. But also, we saw very good impact from the SRS-4, which is a newly launched, as you know, lightweight, more compact boom screed, which also helped the second half performance. With regard to ride-on screeds, we saw also very good second half improvement. Sales grew about $4 million compared to the first. And on a full year basis, you know, modestly 4% versus the prior year. Really, the driver in that category is the S940, which is a continues to be a very popular machine due to its versatility and productivity. And we continue to see a really good opportunity for that product line going forward. Remanufactured machines sales were up, you know, modestly on a dollar basis, but 30% on a percentage basis. Basically, they are a low margin product category for us, but the improved sales provides the benefit of releasing some working capital, the investment in inventory, which provides a cash flow benefit. So we're pleased with the performance of that line item as well. And then the 3D Profiler system, which is a very solid complementary product that increases utilization of our laser screeds, continues to perform very well, 20% growth on a full year basis, as exterior concrete slabs for parking lots, car parks continue to be very popular, and certainly is something that we continue to see as a good opportunity as well going forward. With regard to the Line Dragon, Somero Line Dragon, we had the first full year of the next generation version of that machine, which basically took the best of the acquired Line Dragon business and then the legacy SP16. And we launched that at the latter part of 2019. A full year of sales resulted in very good growth. We also added some targeted dealer relationships to extend our reach to some new customers, as well as some harder to reach geographic locations. So we're very pleased with the performance of that category. With regard to the SkyScreed, we had $1 million in sales, matching the 2019 total. As you know, the first half was very quiet because we were not able to get on job sites to perform product demonstrations. As we saw some of those restrictions lessen and loosen, we were able to get some product demonstrations done here in the US, which translated into sales. We sold 3 units of the new SkyScreed 36 this year in 2020. And we see some good momentum as we move forward. And we certainly see a very sizable long-term opportunity from that product category. And then with regard to other revenues, that's primarily going to be aftermarket parts and service. And we're pleased with the performance of that category, particularly highlighting the high level of utilization of our equipment in the field. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Enzo, who will walk through the financial results.
Thanks, John. So starting on slide 6, we have our operating results. As John and Jack described, despite the challenges during the year, with the very strong second half year trading, financially, the company fared quite well. We were able to sustain reasonably close margins comparable to the prior year. There was a slight decrease of 200 basis points, driven by 3 main causes. In the first half of the year, we had lower volume, which led to some inefficiencies in our factory. In the second half of the year, we had a higher level of sales go through dealers, which we used to complement our direct sales efforts. And thirdly, as John mentioned, we had a higher level of reman sales, which yield a lower gross margin. As we project ahead, we feel relatively comfortable with our current gross margin level. We're always looking for opportunities to improve, but with the highly variable cost model, we're comfortable that we can sustain the mid 50% range gross margin. Moving down, our total operating expenses increased $800,000. On the one hand, we had higher salary compensation, including incentive programs. As we worked through our cost-cutting measures in the first half of the year, we made the conscious decision not to affect our SG&A team, including recent new hires brought on to support new product development and new product sales, which ultimately fuel long-term growth. So we made the strategic decision not to cut into our SG&A. We also made investments in our IT infrastructure. As the business becomes a bit more complex with more products, more locations, and a lot more people working remotely, it became very important to fortify our cybersecurity and IT infrastructure. Those two higher expenses were partly offset by lower travel-related expenses, obviously with the COVID restrictions. Lastly, on this slide, our effective tax rate increased over the prior year, and that's mostly due to the fact that we had lower sales outside of the U.S., resulting in a lower foreign tax credit for us. Moving on to the balance sheet, we ended the year with 50% more cash than in the previous year. We had a significant working capital contribution, lower capital expenditures, as well as lower dividend payments. In terms of working capital contribution, the major part of that came from a decrease in accounts receivable of about 47%. That was partly due to consistent and strong collections during the year, but also we ended the year with a higher level of advanced customer payments than the same time in 2019. Inventory decreased 1.2, also contributing to the working capital upside. That was partly due to the fact that we had higher volume in the second half, partly offset by additional new products that we introduced during the year. The last point on the slide, our current liabilities increased $2.6 million, and that's really a reflection of the higher level of advanced customer payments. As we receive these deposits, the other side is a liability until we're able to fulfill those orders, which we expect to do so in 2021. Moving on to the cash flow on slide 8, again, very positive cash generation, healthy working capital contribution, as we mentioned. However, collectively, the working capital change we view as a one-time uplift to cash generation and not necessarily a recurring theme. So we would expect that to some extent, some of that will reverse in 2021. Our capital expenditures decreased $1.5 million. That was due to the fact that we completed two major expansion projects in 2020, one being the Houghton facility expansion and the second being the training facility expansion. And also in prior year, we had the acquisition of the Line Dragon assets, which is obviously a non-recurring event. Looking ahead, we would expect a typical CapEx run rate of about $1 million to $1.5 million. We paid out $13.9 million in dividends. 11.6 of that was attributable to the ordinary and supplemental dividend for 2019. The remainder was a $2.3 million interim payment that we made in 2020. And we'll talk a bit more about our dividend payments coming up in the next slide. We substantially completed the share buyback that we announced in the previous year. And as John mentioned, we intend to conduct a second share buyback of $1 million, which we expect to complete by the end of 2021. Moving on to our dividend slide for 2020, our dividend policy remained the same. As a reminder, we're paying out 50% of adjusted net income and 50% of cash in excess of a cash reserve of $15 million. However, moving forward, we're increasing the cash reserve from $15 to $20 million as the business continues to grow and becomes a bit more complex. And also, as we're introducing new products, entering new segments, there may be opportunities for us to take advantage of. So we want to have that flexibility to be able to react quickly and make investments accordingly. On the right-hand side, we have two charts illustrating the ordinary dividend and the supplemental dividend. In terms of the ordinary dividend, a total of $9.4 million, of which we paid out $2.3 last year, leaving a balance of $7.1 million. The supplemental dividend amounted to $10.2 million, so the total of $17.3 million will be paid out on April 30th to shareholders of record as of April 9th.
Thank you, Enzo. So I'd like to do a brief walkthrough our strategy update and our 2021 outlook. So starting on slide 11, just taking a step back with regard to our vision and strategy, in a very broad sense, you know, we start with a very broad view of our potential market opportunity. That is, wherever there's horizontal concrete slabs being placed in the world. And then we look to leverage the technology we've developed through the years and also look to acquire new technology so we can deliver solutions for our customers, all with the goal of helping them build more successful, profitable businesses. So within that, we have really two main growth levers of growing the business, and that's through product innovation and through deepening our international presence. And we made great progress on both fronts in 2020. So on the innovation side, as we had discussed, we've added three products to our product portfolio that contributed immediately and meaningfully to results, resulting in $7.4 million in 2020 revenues. That expands our product portfolio to 17 products that are protected by 87 patents and patent applications. On the international market presence side, we also made great progress. We continue to have a very broad, solid set of resources positioned across the globe outside of the US. About a quarter of our non-operational resources are based outside the US. We added direct resources to the Australian market, which we think creates a good opportunity for us to further penetrate that market. And most importantly, we see really good opportunities from the new products we've brought to market to help us deepen our international presence. We view the product innovation and international market growth levers as very closely intertwined. So on slide 12, speaking to the new products we brought to market, it really started with the SRS-4, which is a product we're really excited about. We're pleased with the traction we gained with this product very quickly out of the gate. It's a machine that complements our boom screed lineup. It's a lightweight, more compact, easier to transport boom screed that opens up hard to reach job sites and applications that we were not able to get to with our larger boomed equipment. We really see a good opportunity for this product, both domestically here in the US, as well as in international markets, particularly Europe, where the smaller size, easier to transport features are really attractive. The second of the products we brought to market in 2020 is the SkyScreed 36, which is really the next step in the evolution of the SkyScreed lineup. It extends the reach of the SkyScreed, which was made possible through some advanced hydraulic valving control system. And it really benefits the customer by reducing the number of required pick points to place concrete on a deck. So it increases the productivity of the SkyScreed offering. As I mentioned, we got good traction at the end of the year as we started to resume some product demonstrations. So we feel pleased with resuming the trajectory of that new product lineup. And most importantly, we see a substantial long-term opportunity from that category. And then the last product we brought to market was the Broom and Cure, the Somero Broom and Cure, which, while it's not a laser screed, it's a very nice complementary adjacent niche product that provides a solution for applying curing agents and finishing exterior concrete slabs. Again, this product was driven by, it was really a customer-led product development process. So we feel very pleased with the result. We see have experienced some good early interest in this product that we launched about mid-year in 2020. And we see it as a nice addition to the lineup, and we see good opportunity going forward from this product. So on slide 13, you know, basically with these new products, I think it's important to highlight how we've really increased the potential addressable market for the business, which is key to creating long-term sustainable growth. If you kind of start from the early days, you know, the very beginning of Somero was based on one product, which was the predecessor to the S22, a product named the S240 that really served one market segment, which was the slab on grade market, and one application within that market segment, which is very large placements, such as a warehousing or manufacturing facility. You know, since the very early days, we've expanded the portfolio to add 16 products to increase the markets we address to 3. So now we've added the slab on deck, and most recently the high-rise structural market, and then a host of applications within those market segments that we now have solutions for our customer base. That's a significant advancement in terms of potential addressable market, and we continue to see opportunities to expand the potential addressable market, both domestically and globally. And we feel that that is the key to us in creating a long-term sustainable growth path. And then lastly, in terms of investments in 2020, on slide 14, we also invested in continuing to provide world-class training and access to expertise and education for our customer base. As Enzo spoke a little bit about before, we expanded our Somero Concrete Institute training facility in Fort Myers to extend the classroom capabilities. We also made investments and advanced our virtual and on-demand training capabilities to create additional channels to provide education and expertise to our customer base. And we feel that this is a sustainable competitive advantage for the company, an offering that is not matched by any other company out there. And we believe it's also very important to provide a solution for the industry to create a venue to provide live in-person training to develop a pool of skilled labor for the industry, which is a perpetual pain point for our customers. So now jumping over to the outlook for 2021 on slide 15, you know, as we spoke about earlier, it really does begin with the US market, which is the largest market for the company. And we're very confident in the health of the US non-residential construction market. Our view of the market begins with our customers. So it's a bottoms up view, and we're pleased with the workloads our customers are reporting to us. They have project backlogs that extend well into 2021. And that gives us good confidence in the outlook for this year. We also saw a good uptick in momentum to end 2020 that appears to be carrying forward into 2021. So we feel good about where the US market is at this point. When you get outside the US, obviously we do see generally positive activity levels and market conditions in terms of non-residential construction. We are getting good feedback from our international customers that they have a good amount of work in front of them. So COVID-19 impacts or restrictions aside, we do expect to see good opportunity for 2021 growth in these international markets from existing and new products. And with regard to new products, we continue to see really attractive long-term growth opportunities in our new products, particularly the SkyScreed segment, which is a significantly underpenetrated or unpenetrated high-rise structural market segment. And we expect that we will continue to get traction in that area and grow that part of our business. In support of all these activities, we intend to accelerate the hiring of our field sales and support staff, which will place some upward pressure on our operating costs for the year in 2021. It'll be in excess of what we've experienced in the past, but it's an important investment to make to fully represent our broadened product lineup, to fully represent the new products we've brought to market, and to make sure that we are able to penetrate both domestic and international markets with those opportunities. So that investment will be not just domestic, but it will be international resources in support of new products across the world. And then lastly, you know, with a comprehensive view of all these factors rolled together, we do expect 2021 will be a profitable year, another year of healthy cash generation, revenue growth in the mid-single digit percentage range, and modest EBITDA growth compared to 2020, which takes into account the increased pace of investment in selling and support resources. So with that, we would like to open it up to take any questions that you may have.
We have a question which asks, do you have a policy on when to execute share buybacks? For example, when value of the business is less than your assessment of the intrinsic value?
That's a very good question. Our share buyback program has been solely for the purpose of managing the dilution from our ongoing equity award programs. Our primary mechanism to return cash to shareholders remains the dividends, both the ordinary and supplemental. And while we've never fully closed the door on a share repurchase program, you know, if the opportunity arises down the road, we are committed to maintaining the dividend policy, and we are very mindful of strong shareholder preference towards dividends versus share buybacks.
Thank you. And how does Somero market share compare with competitors such as Ligshine?
You know, we've had competitors since 1989. And very honestly, we see our competitors because we'll occasionally compete with them in demonstrations sometimes. Certainly, when a customer is looking to purchase, they will, in some cases, mention that they're talking to one of the other competitors. But from a market share standpoint, we don't see an awful lot of any of these competitors. So we still think that we have very significant market share compared to any of them, which is 90% or better. There's no way to measure it because there's no statistics on anybody. We're public, but all the rest of the companies are private. So you have no way of getting a handle on what their sales are. But we know that we still have a very, very dominant position.
And related to that, have the Somero patents prevented competitors entering any of your product categories?
Yes, we've been involved in a number of patent infringement lawsuits that basically all have been finalized to our benefit. So it's something that we do aggressively, and we do it constantly. We're looking every time somebody comes out with a new product. We immediately get our patent attorneys on it and our engineers on it to look and see if they're infringing. If they are infringing, we file a lawsuit against them.
Thank you. FinCap have a forecast of $93.3 million revenue for 2021, but this implies a run rate below the $53 million of the 2020 half two revenue. This seems at odds with the 2021 outlook of a solid US performance and a bounce back in the rest of the world. How do you square these?
So we believe we have reason to be very optimistic about 2021. One of the, you know, the strength of the second half recovery from the first half in 2020, we do believe there's likely an element of catch up from the first half in terms of activity that got pushed into the second half. You know, we're comfortable with our outlook in that we see a really good growth rate opportunity in front of us. But we're still early in the year. And while we had some good momentum carried forward into 2021, we're not really in a position to make a call for anything more aggressive out there at this point. But we feel very confident. We feel very, very pleased with the start of the year. And we think that there's a good run rate in North America and good opportunity outside of the US.
Thank you. And when you make money, is it just on the capital sale of new machines or are there consumables involved?
So the sales for us, it's primarily equipment revenue. That's our primary, you know, revenue stream comes from the sale of the equipment, which includes at the time of sale, the accessories, as well as some of the training. We do have an aftermarket parts and service revenue stream, which is generally about 15% of our revenues, which is continuing to modestly grow as you get a larger installed base out there. But we're primarily an equipment revenue generation business.
Thank you. And how big is the addressable market for the SkyScreed in the USA?
So we look at it in terms of just the square feet of concrete placed on a relative basis. And in the high-rise segment, we see roughly as about half the size of the slab-on-grade market globally. However, you know, we are mindful to say a portion of that market, you kind of have to divide it up into different types of applications. In our current product offering, the SkyScreed, is not able to address that full potential market. We do expect we'll need to be continued product development along the way to increase the percentage of that large untapped market that we can get to. But we see it as a very sizable opportunity and a very sizable long-term opportunity.
Thank you. And how do customers pay? Is any equipment leased? And do you have a bad debt problem in any market?
Sure. So we typically do not get involved with any of the financing. We will sort of coordinate or refer to financing firms, and the customer and those financing firms will handle the financing. So for the most part, we are fully paid either in advance or shortly after the sale. We take a pretty conservative view of receivables in terms of bad debt outside the U.S. It's more of an accounting mechanism rather than a real risk of not collecting. And we have a pretty neat feature with our machines called electronic financial program, whereby we're able to shut off these machines anywhere in the world if a customer is not paying in accordance with the terms of the sale.
Thank you. And are you able to evaluate how the increase in internet purchases has impacted growth for Somero products? And does this give forward vision of growth in emerging markets as their economies follow this trend?
So there's a couple of factors there. Clearly, there's been an increase in demand for warehousing in the US, which is driven, I think, ultimately by the move away from brick and mortar retail into e-commerce. And certainly that's been an element of the performance. The improvement in the second half was some of that activity. But really, when you look at our performance, it's hard to isolate that part. But we're particularly pleased that we're seeing kind of a broad-based increased take rate across our product lineup. And the take rates across our product lineup are driven by the types of projects that our customers are working on. They pick the piece of equipment that makes sense for whatever project is in front of them. So while we're seeing some good improvement in the large boom screeds, which would be tied to U.S. warehousing, generally type of those types of applications, we're also seeing good take rates across the board. The second part of the kind of thought process is, you know, clearly the U.S. is moving more aggressively towards e-commerce. We do believe that is a global phenomenon and that we would expect to see similar sort of shifts in the international markets as well. we believe the U.S. is probably in front of that curve, but we would expect to see some global shifts as well down the road.
Thank you. And how material was the manufacturing capacity increase last year? And did the company think this will be fully utilized in the upcoming year?
So the expansion in the Houghton facility was a really critical investment to enable us to accommodate the new lineup with a lot of new products coming on, some of which have different sort of size requirements. It did get us to a point where we can sustain, we believe, a business of about 125 to 130 million. But it also was important to support the different types of products like the SkyScreed and all of that. So it's positioned us well for the next phase of growth of the business. And we're really pleased with kind of where we're sitting today.
Thank you. COVID-19 has impacted the outlook for offices and urban living negatively. Does this affect the potential market for SkyScreed?
That's a very good question. And we all hear a lot of that. Right now, it's really hard to know. We haven't seen any statistics as to just how big an impact that is. And at least over here in the States, there's an awful lot of discussion about wanting people back in the office, but still allowing them to work from home. So you don't know whether we're still going to have the same amount of office space that we have, only people aren't going to go into it 5 days a week. Or is there really going to be a reduction in the amount of office space? And right now, it's way too early in the process. Most large buildings that go up, it's anywhere from a 3 to a 4 year cycle from when they first decide to make the investment till they complete it. So it's really too early to get any statistics on what's going to happen.
Thank you. Given the slowdown in China, what's the likelihood of increases in other sizable markets, for example, India or others where online activity could increase warehousing activity?
So basically, our strategy internationally is to put resources where we see the biggest opportunities, near, medium, and in many cases, long-term opportunities. You know, really the ultimate driver for our business in those international markets remains the drive towards quality flat level floors. So much of our market development activity has been to really promote that and increase the adoption of and requirement of those types of quality floors. You know, India is similar, you know, in terms of its adoption of quality has been at a slightly faster pace than what we have been seeing in China. So obviously we invested resources in India and see it as a good long-term growth opportunity. Our expectations are that these markets will continue to kind of go through steps. And as you get from one step to the next, then you add resources to support the longer term growth. So we're kind of looking for a growth in these international markets by adoption of quality, but also by selling into these markets the new products we're bringing to market.
Thank you. And staying with China, China seems to be a difficult market. Given that the size of the market, I assume it's very large. Is it more difficult to protect patents in China versus elsewhere in the world?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in terms of the landscape in China, it's different than what we've experienced elsewhere. There is a lot of knockoff equipment that you will see in China. We're no different than any other industry. And that type of competition we see in China is geared towards the low end of the market, which is, we consider it the productivity market segment. It is very difficult to protect patented technology in China. And we are basically very mindful of that. So, you know, our market segment in China is geared towards the customers that want quality flat level floors that the competition can't match. The productivity low-end part of the market is a place that is where we see the knockoffs, the types of things that would be sort of copycat type versions of our equipment. But we're not really chasing that part of the market.
Thank you. Does the market differ in the UK and Europe from the US? And is the competition different in the UK and Europe versus the US?
No, I would say that the competition is similar. There's competitors in Europe that don't sell in the U.S. They sell in Europe, but they've done it in similar by making similar machines, even though they're trying to get around our patents. So there's really no difference between them. As I mentioned, the first competitor came on in 1989, and he was located in Holland. So that's actually where the very first competitor started. So we've had competition forever. and we expect that we will have competition forever. Our job is to provide better value and better service to the customer than the competitors.
Thank you. And how do you plan to drive growth in international markets, mainly via distributors or direct sales? And what use will online technology play in sales? Or do customers need to see equipment in operation before buying?
I'm going to answer that question in a few parts. So the international growth, as I mentioned before, you know, will be mostly driven by demand for quality flat level floors. So we'll continue to be developing markets to push that the benefits of flat level quality floors. But we do expect to see growth from the fundamental change in these markets, as well as from new products that we bring to market, which are resonate really well within these international markets. The best example of that would be the SRS4, which we think has a great opportunity internationally. You know, with regard to our approach internationally, it will continue to be direct sales and support. That is our business model. We generally add distributor relationships on a targeted basis when we think that helps us extend our reach, but that's not our primary method to get to the market. And then the third element, or the third part of the question was how technology will be leveraged to sell equipment. Obviously, I think a lot of companies like us have learned how to better leverage technology to increase or broaden the awareness of our products and provide more information about them. But fundamentally, in our business, it does require that face-to-face relationship that will always be a key part of the selling process. And oftentimes for disruptive technology like the SkyScreed will require product demonstration. So we don't anticipate a tremendous change in the way we sell, but we do think the technology will enable us to get to a broader universe of prospects much more efficiently than in the past.
Thank you. And to what do you attribute the dramatic fall in receivables, which have not been this low since 2013?
To some extent, we believe that that's a reflection of our customers' financial health. And secondly, we're continuously in touch with our customers and very aggressively pursue our collections. So for the most part, we believe those are the two main contributing factors.
Thank you. You now have two training facilities in the US. How important a competitive advantage do you regard this? And what would lead you to have a similar training facility in the UK and Europe?
So we have really one global training facility for all the Western customers, which is here in Fort Myers. We think it's an incredibly important differentiator. It does provide the venue to do live in-person training and certification as a certified placer and finisher. As I mentioned earlier, that is the perpetual pain point in our industry, is the lack of skilled labor. That's one of the reasons our customers struggle with growing their businesses, because they can't find trained operators to run the equipment. So we need to provide that solution. It's really important for us. It's also important for the industry. You know, when you get outside the US, you know, when the opportunity presents itself or there's enough critical mass and demand, you know, we'll always consider putting another training facility in place in other parts of the world, such as Europe. But we feel, you know, COVID aside, the training facility here in the US is actually able to efficiently address our Latin American and European customers, as well as the US today.
Thank you. Given your answer to an earlier question about the Chinese market, is the profitability from the Chinese market really worth the investment?
Our view of China has always been a long-term view, and basically, the performance of the Chinese market is effectively break even. So we've kind of viewed that opportunity as an option for future growth. And as I mentioned, you know, the breakthrough obstacle for that market is the demand for quality flat level floors from domestic building owners and end users. And, you know, as we continually evaluate that market, the pace of that demand growth has been slower than we anticipated. So we view China as an option for future growth, and we're continuing to evaluate that market and our approach, you know, given the changing conditions that we're experiencing.
Thank you. Are margins in the US much better given the relatively much larger size? And do you try to manage currency risk?
So our sales are generally quoted based on the US dollar. So we're effectively insulated from currency risk. We don't have concerns about hedging or managing that. What currency fluctuations do is it potentially causes a price increase or decrease in a local market, depending upon how that local market's currency fares compared to the dollar. So we really don't have that risk to manage. And generally, our margins are pretty comparable across the globe. Really, the differences will be types of equipment. So remanufactured machines have a lower margin than others. And in China, we do experience lower margins, partly because we've absorbed some of the increased tariff costs from the US-China trade disputes.
Thank you. And do you find it easier to sell to US companies who have similar construction investments in other countries, for example, in UK and Europe and also elsewhere?
No, we find the types of customers that we deal with domestically and internationally are very similar. And having customers that may have operations in other parts of the world doesn't necessarily provide any unique advantage. I think, you know, one thing that's we've learned is, you know, the concrete contractor profile is very similar anywhere in the world. And we know that profile very well. And we've gained really, really good direct relationships with a large number of contractors across the globe. And so we don't see any real differences.
Thank you. And given your recent answer regarding the Chinese market, does that imply that the construction investments there are less concerned about quality than cost? And as a result, that affects the demand for your sophisticated top quality equipment?
Yes, that is true. Basically, the big difference in China is that if you rent a warehouse anywhere else in the world, the building owner is responsible for the floor, the walls, and the roof. In China, the building owner is not responsible for the floor, the renter is. So when the building owner builds the building, he's not concerned about the quality aspect of the floor, whether it's flat and level and you can put up racking. He just wants the cheapest possible floor to put down. So yes, it's a major difference compared to all the other countries in the world.
Thank you. And do Somero lease equipment?
No, leasing equipment is not something that the leasing companies want to do, because first of all, when you put the equipment on a job site, it does come in contact with the wet concrete. And when that concrete hardens, if you don't clean it very, very quickly and very well, it hardens onto the equipment. And then in order to get it off, you have to hit it with a sledgehammer, and that ends up damaging the equipment. So rental companies do not want to be renting damaged equipment. The second part of it is, if you lease out the equipment, you have to have a certified operator to run it. And that means the leasing companies would have to provide the operator. And that means they would assume liability for putting down the floor, which they're not interested in. So for those two reasons, the leasing companies have never been interested in talking to us, and we've tried in a number of situations.
Thank you. And that's the end of questions. Jack, do you have any closing remarks?
Well, I want to thank everybody for taking the time to call into this and everything. And we're looking forward to a very, very good year, as John has said. We're excited about the opportunities. We're anxious for all of the countries to get out of lockdown and have the whole world be back to what we all knew to be normal. And it certainly looks like that's going to happen this year. So we're excited to see things get better, and we look forward to reporting to you again as the year goes on. Thank you all very much.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.